This episode is brought to you by Amazon Music HD. You clearly like to listen to great podcasts. You probably have great taste in music, too. But are you still streaming your favorite songs in compressed, low-quality audio? Amazon Music HD is a high-def music streaming service that lets you listen to the best music in the best possible quality. Hi, I'm Isaac, and I'm a music-obsessed audio producer. Join me a little later in the show as I explore why I love music with the help of neuroscience and Amazon Music HD. Start your 90-day free trial and hear the difference today at amazon.com/musichd. Renews automatically, new subscribers only, limited time offer, terms apply.
Welcome to Switched on Pop. I'm songwriter Charlie Harding. We've been doing a lot of throwback on the show, classical series on Beethoven. We've been diving into country music, but I feel like we've been missing out on something that we love to do, which is looking at what's happening on the charts and seeing what's new. So I thought it'd be fun to do a chart-topping weather report, do a breezy look through what's happening in music. And Nate is out today, but I'm delighted to introduce to you as my co-host, friend of the pod, writer, critic, and Professor Lauren Michelle Jackson. Welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Oh, so great. Okay, so we have set out the rules of today is that each of us have picked three songs that are either topping the charts or are significant new releases. And you have picked three songs, I have picked three songs. Our goal is to figure out what do they tell us about where we are at musically and maybe more broadly as well. Do you want to lead us off?
Yeah, so first off, we have Wonder, the single by Shawn Mendes. I think this really kicks off what is called the Wonder era of Shawn Mendes. This is him moving into his introspective phase. And I mean, I'm kidding a little bit, but I do think that as much as this song is sort of a ballad and isn't really a huge vocal departure for him,
yeah,
the lyrics do sort of sound more interior than usual. And so, like, in contrast to other songs and other singles he's done, where there seems to be a really clear sort of second person in play, this one's more on that I voice and asking rhetorical questions and being open.
Right before I close my eyes, the only thing that's on my mind, been dreaming that you feel it too. I wonder what it's like to be loved by you.
And there's a video with it where he's running through the forest and getting splashed on by waves and doing all the sort of like pop music-y theatrics that, you know, I personally enjoy, even if it's a little silly.
I tend to agree. I mean, I love the over-the-top epicness of this song. It's one of those like slow builder ballads that he is just such a master of. Starts off really quiet, get just his voice.
I wonder. Right before I close my eyes, the only thing that's on my mind, been dreaming.
And then it's like the world is opening, he's running through the forest, the rain is starting to come down, and then like all of this big bombastic drumming, and he's shouting out over the ocean. I feel like there's something really meaningful about the confessional yearning nature of this song that provides an emotional catharsis that I feel like it stretches my own emotive capacity in a time when I've been entirely hermit-like at home and sort of feel really constrained. It's a real relief from that.
It's a really good, like, I think, like, shower song, car song. and I think, you know, these are really important things in this time right now.
I think another musical moment for me that really captures that is when we finally get to sort of like the end of the song, we have these wild drum fills that are just going like... And underneath it, these heavy, heavy, heavy sub bass notes. I wonder what it's like to be loved by you. Where the beginning might feel, yeah, a little tame. We get the full emotive capacity throughout the arc of the song, and it's such a fun one to bring to the show. Okay, let's keep on moving. So I've picked the song Underdog by Alicia Keys. This goes up to the underdog. Keep on keeping it what you love, and you'll find that someday soon enough you will rise up, yeah. Ooh. Alicia Keys has a new record called Alicia. There's actually a lot I really like on this album. There's some beautiful songs, great production. Like there's songs that came in where I was like, ooh, immediately my ear is just like, I'm listening. There's a 3-hour drive with Sampha. Also, Me Times 7 with Tierra Whack. There's some really lovely songs here. But that brings us to the single Underdog. This song is her most successful song since 2012's Girl on Fire. It's got a lot of co-writers, including Ed Sheeran, of all folks. And I think we actually hear a lot of his influence. And it's trying to speak to issues of inequality, sending love out to essential workers in the pandemic. And the song even has a sort of campfire sing-along type feel. Everybody rise up. You can ride it. We're supposed to use this as an anthem for overcoming and celebrating underdogs. Like, I appreciate the attempt here. And I know that Alicia Keys started out herself as an underdog, and I think works hard to stay connected with that. And yet, I feel like despite the great intentions, this really feels like a song of a celebrity who's failing to see the power dynamics at play in their track. It feels like a sort of corporate empowerment anthem, and it has some issues with power. The literary devices that she uses, I think, are quite problematic. In the first verse, we have a homeless person without a name. She was walking in the street, looked up and noticed he was nameless, he was homeless. She asked him his name and told him what hers was. He gave her a story about life. And the narrator speaks to this homeless person and is inspired by their story. And then we lose that character and instead in the second verse go to a taxi cab driver from another country. She's riding in a taxi back to the kitchen, talking to the driver about his wife and his children, on a run from a country where they put you in prison for being a woman and speaking your mind. And here the narrator decides to talk to their taxi cab driver and learns all about the challenges they've overcome in their life. And I think that those are both a view from privilege and not a view from actually being the underdog.
No, I completely agree. It feels very much like a sort of anthem that I felt like we passed by in the last moment of us trying to like come together as a country and like elect somebody for like the highest office. It felt like very 2015, 2016. And I felt like we kind of learned from the, what's the Katy Perry song? The like roar of it all, like the that kind of version of like a rousing song. Yeah, and I think we're like really in a moment where people are noticing a profound misreading on behalf of a lot of celebrities who are like trying to do the good thing right now. And it's like, do the people want a rousing anthem, or do they want a jam, or like something they can dance to, or something they can nod their head to, or something they can think to? Or I always just like kind of wonder who these kinds of anthems are for, especially in a moment where we're not like gathering together in like a stadium.
I mean, I think a great counterexample would be like Anderson .Paak's Lockdown. You should have been downtown. The people are rising. We thought it was a lockdown. They opened the fire. Them bullets was flying. Who said it was a lockdown? He's like, you should have been downtown. Like, the people were rising. Like, he's really describing the marches as they're happening, releasing a song that is of that moment and it feels like he's there telling that story as a participant, feels really different than, yeah, like the view from above or like the view from the stage at the stadium where let me tell you how other people are feeling in a way that just, again, it's just, it's in the subtleties, but it doesn't work. And I have to say, I have another gripe, which is that the final line in the chorus.
Let's go up to the underdog. Keep on keeping at what you love. You'll find that someday, soon enough, you will rise up, yeah.
This goes out to the underdog. Keep on keeping at what you love. You'll find that someday soon. You'll rise up, yeah. And this feels like a message which is in so much contemporary popular music. This is not unique here to this song. I think it's an issue that we're all grappling with, which is like the way in which we have absorbed neoliberal ideology so deeply that like the only way for us to succeed is to be the underdog and to pull ourselves up through our own bootstraps. And it's funny though, because this moment here sounds a lot like another song that I think offers perhaps another reading of the same idea. All right, Hamilton, what do you think? that's my shot from Hamilton, one of the most successful songs off the record. And when we hear Underdog, it feels like really similar.
You'll find that someday, soon enough, you will rise up, yeah.
Wow. No, that's like exactly, oh my gosh, that's amazing. Even the like, rise up, like, very like,
yeah,
very
little text painting moving up with the, yeah, absolutely, it's very Broadway. And I guess this is why I'm thinking, like, I like the idea that we could maybe think about it from the Hamilton perspective, which is like rising up isn't spontaneously through your own work, through your own individual effort, becoming the star you've always wanted to be that breaks the mold, but rather the collective rising up. And I think that, I don't mean to say that that's not in the song, but I think it's another way, like, it reclaims the song a little bit if we think about it from that perspective. And again, I celebrate the effort. It's important that we're trying to look at these issues. I'm glad that pop music is trying to think about issues of inequality, but I think we need to make sure that we do so in inclusive ways that doesn't tokenize people. And all that said, like, the rest of the album, it's beautiful. Go and listen to it. It's great. It's work worth engaging with. And I appreciate sort of thinking critically about what celebrities are trying to do and why the view from the top might not always be the view that the people need.
Well said.
So maybe on a more upbeat note, you've brought a really fun song.
Yeah. So my next song is, it's not a new song, but it is on the charts. And it's Dua Lipa's Break My Heart, which is a song I'll already admit my bias, I love. But I think what's interesting about the life of this song is that it was released as a single during those sort of early lost, like staggered weeks of quarantine. And it was the single that I think more than anything made Dua like the front runner for this like impromptu title of quarantine queen, because, you know, the lyrics are all about, you know, warring internally between the safety of like staying in with the risks of going out. I should have stayed at home, cause now there ain't no way you go. Am I falling in love with the one that could break my heart? Oh no. You know, the song is about, you know, mostly about emotional safety, right? And about heartbreak or potential heartbreak. When it came out, it just felt so timely. In terms of the sort of shared risk of, you know, not only not going out or the shared risk of going out, but going out in the way that like disco is made for, you know, getting close and being with your friends and rubbing up on people and breathing on each other and all that jazz. And in a moment when we can't do that, you know, the lyrics just felt so poignant and very like home disco. And then, of course, there's, you know, that interpolation from In Excess, which is like the most attention-grabbing thing, I think.
Wait, I don't know this. I totally missed it. What is it?
In Break My Heart?
Yeah, well, I totally missed this. What is it?
I should have stayed at home, cause I was doing better alone. But when you said hello,
I know that was the end of it all. Do, do, do.
It's the guitar line. Whoa, that is a great reference. And I also love how the song borrows so much of NXS's production. Like, it's got the disco funk, which NXS has too, but it also has, like, sort of like Prince 80s style percussion. Oh, I love that.
It's a banger. I think the song, more than anything, kind of means that we're more or less still listening to a lot of the same, or rediscovering a lot of the same albums that have been coming out within the past couple months, because there's time to and there's room to, and still thinking with future nostalgia, which, I mean, I sure am. I still play that album a lot.
Oh, yeah. It's on RIP. I mean, this is one that I feel like we are willing to look at some of the hard things of what's going on in the world right now, as long as it's like caked in some disco fun and I don't have to look at it too closely and I can dance along. Yet the song does use its core message in some really creative musical ways. And there was one that I wanted to point to that I was listening to this while driving down the highway yesterday, and I almost had to be like, oh my God, I have to pull off and like listen to this thing, because it's so brilliantly produced.
Of attention, you know you can get whatever you want from me, whatever you want it, baby. It's
your... How would you describe her voice in that moment?
Transcendent? Is that totally. Is that the right answer? No.
Doesn't it feel like it's in a sanctuary? Like, the voice is cavernous. It's enormous. This is that moment that I think, as you're pointing to, is like, this feels like in a dance club kind of moment. She's saying on the center of attention, all of the world is sort of like starting to focus in around, like it feels like the lights are bright. She's speaking about, it's in you, in my reflection. Her voices are reflecting around the room.
It's you with my reflection, I'm afraid of all the things.
It feels like Dua is all around us. And then
I would have stayed at home.
It gets like real quiet, or like whispery, or just like, it's very like local.
Exactly. It's totally narrow. All of that reverb that we had earlier, all that sanctuary, cavernous sound, gone. And I would have stayed at home. I would have been alone. It becomes interior.
I would have stayed at home, because I was doing better alone. But when you said hello, I knew that was the end of it all.
So even the way that the song is produced, I think, creates that feeling of expansiveness, like I'm going out, and then like, actually, no, in the chorus, like, it's just me. I'm here dancing by myself.
Yeah, and I think like the song as a whole, balancing those two scales, like it really does like replicate the kind of like ambivalence of like, do I go out or not? Or like, do I regret going out? You know, sort of while you're even in the experience, it's like, was this the right choice? And thinking of like all the counterfactuals.
I think you said it just right. That's why this song has persisted for so long, because we are still living in exactly that question. There are many more questions about where we're at that we need to explore, where we're at musically, societally, and we're going to do so in the second half of our episode. The last 6 months have been extraordinary, to say the least, between a lingering pandemic, an ongoing social justice crisis, a stressful election, and climate change banging down our front door. It's hard to find the good stuff to hold on to. But there is good that's happening all around, and it's in how we've all pulled together to take meaningful action. That's why Allbirds is on a mission to leave the planet in better shape than they found it. They make shoes from premium natural materials that are not only comfy, stylish, and well-designed, but also carbon neutral thanks to sustainable practices like offsetting their carbon emissions. Their latest product that's built with the planet in mind is the all-new Woolpiper, Allbirds twist on the classic lace-up sneaker. I recently got a pair, they sent me some, and it's great because I don't think I've worn anything nice in, I don't know, what, since March? And this is the best pair of shoes that I've gotten in a long time. They look great, they've got that vintage, old-school vibe, but they're way comfier than those classic sneakers that you're used to trying on that never fit and are incredibly uncomfortable. Woolpipers are the opposite. There are choices you can make today to help the planet we all share. When you buy a pair of Allbirds, you know exactly what impact your purchase makes on the planet, because they list the carbon footprint of everything they make right on the product. With Allbirds, feel confident knowing you're wearing a product that's doing right by our feet and the planet. Learn more about their sustainable practices and find your pair of Woolpipers at Allbirds.com today.
This is advertiser content.
What's your favorite song this week?
Hi, I'm Isaac Kaplan-Woolner, a music-obsessed producer for Vox Creative. I know that I love music deeply, but I'm not exactly sure why. So, with the help of Amazon Music HD, I tried to find out.
Music feels like you're entering a different realm, and that's a realm beyond you.
That's Jessica Dobson, guitarist and lead singer of Seattle band Deep Sea Diver.
And it matters to me because I know that it affects people in ways that I couldn't imagine. There are places in our hearts that other things can't access, and I know that music can do that.
Music can reliably put us into a mood on a par with certain drugs.
That's neuroscientist and musician Daniel J. Levitin, author of This Is Your Brain on Music.
Fast music tends to goose the adrenaline system. Slow music tends to do the opposite. Happy music can release dopamine and serotonin. We can see distinct neurochemical changes in response to different kinds of music.
So music isn't just something we love. It's a central part of who we are, and it can help us feel better and do better in our daily lives. Step up to uncompressed, pure music that allows us to hear and feel more with Amazon Music HD. Start your 90-day free trial and hear the difference today at amazon.com/musichd. Renews automatically, new subscribers only, limited time offer, terms apply.
All right, Lauren, it's going to get explosive in here. We're going to listen to BTS's Dynamite. Let's go! This is a fascinating track with a lot more going on than I had originally known, because I thought this was just riding that disco funk wave, that Dua Lipa kind of sound that we had been hearing. You know, it's got fun house beats. It's got a pop drop. It's got these huge horns. It even has this hilariously over-the-top modulation, which mirrors the explosiveness of the Dynamite in the chorus. But I always thought that lyrically, this was a really weak song until a colleague of mine helped set the record straight and totally changed my mind.
Hi, I'm Asia Romano. I am a culture reporter for Vox, and I recently wrote an article analyzing the BTS song Dynamite, which has been a chart topper the last couple of weeks. A really popular, fun summer bop.
The song debuted at number one. It's only the third song in history to do that. This is a big song, and Asia's a real K-pop fan, really knows the genre, and sees Dynamite through a lens that most U.S. listeners are probably missing. So I asked Asia what's significant about this song.
A couple of things. It made history because it's the first time a K-pop group has ever reached the number one spot on the Billboard Hot 100, which has been a goal of the band for several years and was really, really treated like a national event in Korea. The president of the country congratulated them on this achievement. It was a big, big deal, and certainly a big deal for the fans of the band.
And for the band, this is significant for another reason as well, aside from being nationally celebrated, which is extraordinary. Asia told me that this is a song which is musically consistent with past summer hits from BTS, songs that are airy and breezy and bubbly, kind of like DNA. Or Boy With Love. But the real change here is that they're singing exclusively in English. And this is a band who said that they want to keep their identity true. They want to make music which is authentically Korean. And in fact, there's this ongoing battle between the BTS Army and US radio, because despite being one of the most streamed artists right now, US radio has been reluctant to carry BTS because it's predominantly in Korean. And so at first glance, it kind of feels like, wait a minute, has BTS caved to that pressure?
I want to make very clear that the lyrics were not written by the band. Often the band has considerable creative control and creative input into the songs that they produce. Many of the band members are musicians and producers themselves and have written or co-written songs on their albums. But Dynamite was essentially ordered by the CEO of Columbia Records, who is BTS's US distributor. And he basically tasked UK producer David Stewart and UK songwriter Jessica Agombar to write a song that could be a number one hit for BTS. They were essentially writing to spec.
I feel like this is a story that so many people get upset about in pop music, right? Like there's some behind the scenes corporate boardroom manipulation, and maybe that explains the song's totally inane lyrics.
They sound like they were algorithmically produced in a kind of a vacuum based on the criteria for what Americans think American pop music should sound like.
Right, like the opening lyrics of this, I think, are a shining example.
Shoes on, get up in the morning, cup of milk, let's rock and roll.
Shoes on, get up in the morning, cup of milk, let's rock and roll. Asia points to this lyric as a surreal echo of the first line of Rebecca Black's notoriously derided song Friday, which became an internet meme.
7 a.m. waking up in the morning, gotta be fresh, gotta go downstairs, gotta have my bowl, gotta have cereal.
Asia thinks that this whole thing going on is pretty postmodern.
You get this really weird disconnect because you have this idea of what Americana is being refracted through two British people handed to who are writing for Korean singers. And you get this idea that there's something else at work in these lyrics that's about sort of exploiting and manipulating American perceptions of what Korean singers think American music should be and American images should sound like and how Korean singers would then present that to them. But again, none of this is authentic. It's being written to spec by British people on demand for an American producer. So it's very kind of smoke and mirrors-ish. And in the middle of it, you have these lyrics that are very sunny, very fun. I am in the stars tonight. So watch me bring the fire and set the night alight, shining through the city. With a little funk and soul, light it up like dynamite. That's the chorus. And it's peppy and fun, but what does it mean? I don't know.
I don't think any of us know exactly what these lyrics mean. They are, as Asia said, smoke and mirrors. It could be upsetting that BTS has sung a song all in English to get their number one hit. But maybe there's another way of thinking about this.
What I said in my article is that Dynamite is a collection of disjointed cliches that are trolling Americans. On the one hand, I'm disappointed because I feel like BTS's music and their lyrical abilities are so much more powerful and sophisticated and complex than you get a sense of from Dynamite. And that should be more widely recognized. But on the other hand, I'm amused and I'm happy that they made them number one. And I'm amused and delighted that they seem to have trolled the US music industry and beat them at their own game.
I'm really glad for Asia's analysis because I think my first thought was also really liking the idea that America's own like nonsense narcissism is like becomes a gimmick because I think we're so used to the narrative going the other way, the like Despacito conversation with Justin Bieber, or thinking about the way Drake likes to, I mean Drake is Canadian, but the way in which he likes to sort of dip and dabble into various ethnic languages, right? But here we actually get the reverse. It's like playing upon Americans' own
self-image. And
yeah.
That's brilliant. Totally. I also just love how it helps me realize how empty and meaningless so many lyrics are within popular music, which is often okay. Like sometimes we just need something silly and fun and there's nothing going on there. Like I actually don't think that that's necessarily a bad thing unless you're trying to write a good lyric and it turns out like it's not a good lyric. But here we have someone who's taking that whole cliche and turning it on its head and making, as Asia put it, it's like a song which was commissioned, written by these other songwriters for this producer, then performed by BTS, feels more like some kind of like art pop commentary And I think that the curation and them singing this song and getting a number one hit is a fascinating reflection of where we are at this particular moment.
It's so emblematic not only of how I think a lot of music actually is made today, but also just the way that culture is consumed and interpreted, where on Instagram and Twitter and all the apps, just like everybody's sort of culture is like side by side in a way that, you know, wasn't possible before the internet like opened like all these regional borders. So you have Korean influencers sliding next to the Kardashians, next to like Afrobeats artists, next to all these different people.
Yeah.
And as a consumer, as a user, it's just all getting sucked in and not necessarily differentiated in any sort of specific way. And so the idea that music and culture goes through all these different channels before it gets to you, I think is just a real thing.
Speaking of genres all kind of aligning together, you have a really interesting shift to take the conversation with your next pick.
Yeah, we're going to church again, but not quite. So the song I have is from Justin Bieber called Holy, featuring Chance the Rapper.
Oh God, running to the altar like a track star. Can't wait another second. There's a way you hold me, hold me, hold me, hold me, hold me. Feel so holy.
They've collabed before. I think this is a sort of unique in their line of collabs that they like to do every now and then.
They've mostly made party songs in the past.
Yeah, they usually do like, I mean, I guess the song could be considered fun, but instead of the more sort of R&B or more like poppy or even like sort of like rapish songs that they like to do, I'll call this one gospel-inflected pop. And I think if I say that, I think you kind of know what I mean, because that's a thing now. And I think it's very standard Chance fare. And actually, I think something interesting about this song is that you can almost switch their parts and it would still make sense as a song without either artist needing to like stretch too far outside of their comfort zone. So it's like that very like sway and snap R&B, or like sway and clap R&B. The lyrics are about God, but they maybe are also about a significant other.
I hear a lot about sinners. Don't think that I'll be a saint, but I might go down to the river. 'Cause the way that the sky opens up when we touch it, it's making me say that the way you hold.
The video for this one, I feel compelled to mention just because it's like so odd. There's a video for it where Bieber he plays an oil rig worker who is suddenly out of work. And then he and his wife are evicted, but like destiny smiles on them in the form of Wilmer Valderrama. And it's a lot. They're like praying by the table, and it's all very earnest and heartfelt. And altogether really matches the song, which I think wants to be earnest. And wants to, you know, evoke a sort of spirituality, if not a strict sort of scripture understanding or interpretation of Christianity, which kind of tracks with both of these artists.
I think as we look at the video as well, it has this same issue. It's just like, celebrities, what identities is it appropriate to try on?
Or the video almost feels like it could have been a commercial like on this during the Super Bowl or something like that. Genre of like, whereas I actually think Bieber usually has pretty fun videos. I thought like the Yummy video was fun. I thought like a previous track he was on that Chance was on, I'm the One, like where they're just like at a huge mansion. They're just like having a ball. Like I would love to see that, because like I can't, you know, I can't go anywhere. But this like idea of like trying to be relatable.
Thank you so much, pop musicians, for looking at issues, trying to get them, trying to represent them. There's still homework to do. With all this, with the holy nature, with this collaboration, with this gospel inflection, with these trying on of identities, how are you feeling about holy right now?
I think it's saying that Bieber has, and Chance has, found something meaningful that is meaningful to them that maybe doesn't necessarily fully translate to others.
You took us to one side of the pendulum, a shift towards the holy. I'm going to shift us into a moodier direction. We're going to listen to, as my final pick, 24 Karat Golden's Mood featuring Ian Dior. One way of trying to move past this moment we live in is looking to a holy power, something bigger than ourselves. And another way of looking at this moment is also looking inwards and seeing that, hey, sometimes we're not in a good mood. And a song that on one hand feels upbeat and playful, but is really masking these quite honest and clear lyrics about dealing with depression, dealing with romance that isn't going well because people's emotional well-being is not going well. People toying with each other's hearts. It feels, on one hand, you know, this is a very sort of teenage love song, who broke whose heart kind of a thing. And on the other, sometimes listening to this song actually makes me feel all the feels. It's heavy. We're trying on love to avoid the depression.
We play games of love to avoid the depression. We've been here before and I won't be a victim. Why you always in the mood?
I think it's further heavy because if we look at the charts, you know, emo rap is doing still very well. And this song obviously owes a lot to artists like XXXTentacion, Lil Peep, and Juice WRLD, who currently has 3 songs on the Hot 100. And of course, Juice WRLD recently passed away. His song Wishing Well, which is also on the charts right now, points even more directly to depression and issues of drug abuse.
Sometimes I don't know how to feel. Let's be for real. If it wasn't for the pills, I wouldn't be here. But if I keep taking these pills, I won't be here. Yeah, I just told y'all my secret. Yeah.
So this song for me, I think, kind of like the Dua Lipa track, does that same thing where it's like, there's some heavy stuff going on. I'm going to put it under a beat that is really fun. But it feels very human in that way, right? Where the only way that we can seem to deal with the heaviness is to try to find some kind of musical levity, try to dance to it.
Yeah, the song totally takes me to that, like, my Midwest emo, like, sad kid place where you think it's just you, but actually it's just, like, everyone is, like, going through it, but we're all going through it alone, kind of, like, right now or, like, all the time.
I appreciate that you look to your moody teenage years with smiles on your face. You know, it's like, what else can we do?
In a lot of ways, that is a more comforting sentiment to hear from an artist and from musicians than maybe something more cheery or something more rousing. Like, sometimes you just want to sit and all you can do is just, like, sit in your feels and just, like, wallow in it. And I think I think that's what we're doing. We're all wallowing, but I also think right. we deserve to wallow.
Yeah. It's like, if someone's just like, buck up, you're like, excuse me, I'm really not feeling good here. And I appreciate that there's music that's finding ways to channel that. All right. So we said we were going to do a meteorological analysis of what these things point to. Do we see any patterns emerging?
I mean, it seems like we have the pattern of there are some songs and artists that seem to really tap into the, like, interior life of quarantine, but not just right. quarantine, but just, like, life under a lot of, like, sort of chaotic pressing matters. And then there's seems to be artists who are kind of trying to reach outside of the self in a way that isn't all the way working or doesn't feel as close to what people are going through right now.
Yeah, for sure. Like, you started with Shawn Mendes and Wonder, and in some ways that song's about nothing, and yet it helps me feel the most. And a lot of that just has to do with like the arc of how it's built, and in some ways the sort of openness of its message rather than trying to be specific and capture somebody else's story, strangely, is really working for me right now. But I think we're hearing all kinds of approaches to dealing, exactly as you said, how do we cope? And we're hearing it across really different kinds of music. We're hearing it in ballads. We're hearing it in disco funk. We're hearing it in gospel. We're hearing it in campfire-y pop songs and in emo rap. It's across the board. It feels like it is nice to know that we're all grappling with how to deal with where we're at right now. And we're being offered a lot of different kinds of solutions.
Yeah, and it's also a reminder that no single genre has a monopoly on a mood, so to speak.
Even if you can title your song Mood, you don't own it. Switched on Pop is produced by Bridget Armstrong, engineered by Brandon McFarlane, illustrations by Iris Gottlieb, and social media by Abby Barr. Our executive producers are Nishat Kerwa and Liz Kelly Nelson, and we're a member of the Vox Media Podcast Network. We're, of course, hosted by me, Charlie Harding, and Nate Sloan. He wasn't here today. That's because Nate is a brand new dad. It's so exciting. Congratulations, Nate. Congratulations to the entire family. And welcome, baby Sloan. So happy to have you here. While Nate is going to be out for a little while, he's actually pre-produced a really fun little series on what makes anthems so effective. We're talking about the music that you hear when you go to the sports arena, you're in the stadium, and the song you've heard 1,000 times, but still it gets you stomping your feet, pumping your fist, yelling out loud with everybody. Things we can't do right now and wish we could, but I think going into the music will help take us there. It's a really fun series. We've got 4 episodes coming up in 2 weeks. We'll be back again, of course, next week on Tuesday. Until then, you can find us on any social media platform at Switched On Pop, and you can get to us on the web at switchedonpop.com. Until next week, thanks for listening.
The Perfect Weapon, an HBO documentary film directed by John Maggio, explores the rise of cyber conflict as the primary way nations now compete with and sabotage one another. Based on the best-selling book by New York Times national security correspondent David E. Sanger, the film draws on interviews with top military, intelligence, and political officials for a comprehensive, thoroughly captivating view of the ominous impact cyber conflict has on the world at large. The Perfect Weapon is streaming October 16th on HBO Max.
I'm Julia Furlan, and I'm the host of a new series called Go for Broke. It's about those moments in history when everyone goes a little bit overboard for a big idea. In our first season, we're going back in time to the late 90s. It's a time when computers are coming into every home and dot-com companies are popping up everywhere.
Everybody wanted to stick dot-com on the end of something. Cups.com, glasses.com, you know, shoes.com, pets.com.
And as the frenzy grows and grows, all of a sudden, the dot-com economy falls off a cliff.
People lost their houses. People got their cars recalled. They literally banked their futures on it.
This season, we'll explore what made the dot-com bubble and what could warn us when the next one comes along, if we're not in one already. Go for Broke from Epic and the Vox Media Podcast Network. Subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast app.